Several weeks ago, we felt it would be really good to have a series on biblical healing, on does God heal today? Last week, we had Eddie here with us in the evening, John Hughes in the morning, looking at that subject of biblical healing. Does God heal? And we believe he does. We believe he uses all sorts of ways to bring healing. And we've got a series where we're looking at healing. Next week, Catherine White is going to be speaking in the evening. That's right, isn't it? It's next week, Catherine's speaking. And she's actually going to be speaking about how do you keep praying? How do you keep going when you don't seem to be getting an answer from God or when healing doesn't seem to be coming? We're also going to be looking at... We're also going to be thinking about, in a couple of weeks' time, death as the ultimate healing. Nothing, something we do not need to fear as Christians, because it is the ultimate healing. Something we don't actually, although we believe that, generally talk about a lot in church. And tonight, I want to look at healing past hurts, thinking about how we can be healed from some of the things that have taken place in our past, some of the pain of the past. And the passage I'm going to look at is Colossians 3. Colossians was a letter written by Paul. Paul was one of the first converts to Christianity, and he wrote a lot of the letters in the New Testament. He was a great church planter, and he wrote a lot of letters to the churches to encourage them in their faith. And Colossians 3 is a wonderful letter. And first few verses say this: since then you've been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. For you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. And one of the things that Eddie said last week, and I don't know if you picked up on it, but it was actually probably... The most important thing he said, and it'd be the most important thing I say tonight, but the best healing that can take place is discovering God's love for us, is becoming a Christian. Because when we have that spiritual healing of our relationship with God, it changes our identity. It changes who we are. We become children of God. And we just sang a song, "I Am a Child of God." And that happened because Jesus has died for us. And as this passage says in those first few verses, it says, your life is now hidden with Christ in God. So set your hearts on things above. So this passage is saying, get your focus again on the fact that you are children of God. That is the greatest healing that can ever take place in your or my lives. Your old self died. You have a new identity. And it's discovering that there's a God who loves us and gives us this new identity as his children that's the greatest thing we can ever discover, ever discover. And that's the healing that the people of Whitney need. That's the healing that the people of West Oxfordshire and the world need to discover. Because when you discover this, you discover you don't have to strive to be something that you're not. But rather, you can set your heart on things above and discover your true identity. You know, so much of our world is about striving to achieve something. And you don't have to strive to be something you're not. Set your hearts on things above and discover your true identity. Paul, he wrote this letter, and for him, heavenly mindedness, setting your hearts on things above, must shape our earthly behaviors. So our heavenly mindedness, our discovering our identity in Christ, should change the way that we live. It should change how we live life. And so he goes on in verse 5 and says this: put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways, in the life you once lived, but now you must also rid yourselves of all such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. Do not lie to each other, since you've taken off your old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. Here there is no Gentile or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is all and is in all. So what Paul says is, focus on what's above, put to death all of the stuff that was part of your old self. Now, when today was planned, when we were planning for this series several weeks ago, at that stage, there was no news about Harvey Weinstein and the allegations about the abuses that he's carried out. There were no ministerial resignations because of inappropriate sexual behavior or allegations of sexual assault and harassment in the corridors of power. I don't know how you're responding as you read the newspaper and as you see these things coming out. I feel a mixture of anger and of deep sadness that leaders in whatever field would abuse the power that they have and the people working for them. But I also have to be honest, I'm not altogether surprised. You see, when I mentor someone, or when I'm in an accountability relationship with someone, we always talk about money, sex, and power, as well as other things, about our spiritual life and rhythms of life. But money, sex, and power. You see, all three things can be so good. Money, used well, generously, and for God's glory, makes a huge difference to our world. The power and influence we have can be used with humility to bring acts of justice and mercy. And consensual sexual intimacy is at the heart of a loving marriage. However, all three things can be easily corrupted and abused. And I challenge leaders and have leaders who challenge me about how is temptation working in those areas in my life? How am I dealing with greed, with lust, with evil desires? Because I need to keep putting those things off. Keep putting them to death. I am a child of God. I know I'm a child of God. I'm confident that I'm a child of God. But I keep needing to put to death those earthly things. And let's get real. We all face temptation. None of us are perfect. And as Paul says in one of his other letters to the church in Corinth, so if you think you're standing firm, be careful that you don't fall. No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. So Paul talks about putting to death sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed. And I imagine in the next couple of days, there might well be a tabloid headline that says, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed found in the House of Commons. Found in Hollywood. That's why I'm not surprised. Because if you're not putting those earthly things to death, they will thrive. And they will particularly thrive in places of power. We need to put them to death. So please don't let anyone tell you that the Bible is not relevant. When Paul, 2,000 years ago, wrote, put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, sexual immorality, lust, evil desires, and greed, put them to death, and if you think you're standing firm, be careful you don't fall, he could so easily have been writing to the 21st century. He could so easily have been writing to the 21st century church. Now, in some ways, that's all a bit of an aside. But I didn't feel I could talk about this subject with this passage and with all that is going on in our world at the moment without saying that. The challenge, we put to death those things. What I want to talk about is the next verses, about how we can be healed from past hurts through the power of forgiveness. Healing past hurts that have happened in our lives because of the actions of others, because of someone else's greed or evil, someone who's committed the abuse. And I need to make it absolutely clear that forgiveness does not mean that people should not be held to account for their actions. Forgiveness does not mean that things are let go of. The fact that ministers are being held to account for past behavior is a good thing. When we forgive someone, we are setting ourselves free from bitterness and anger. We're getting rid of rage. And the power of forgiveness is that it does set us free. And sometimes it sets us free to pursue justice for others who've experienced what we have. The passage goes on to say, and if we're truly embracing being raised with Christ, setting our hearts on things above, therefore, verse 12, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, and that is what you are. If you're setting your minds on Christ, you're putting off those earthly things, you're a child of God. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. You know, put off that other stuff. Put on this good stuff. Put on this stuff. Because as we put on this stuff, that other stuff has less space in our lives. Put on this stuff. Put on compassion, gentleness, patience, humility, kindness. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. The main thing I want you to take away from today is that forgiveness is a choice. Forgiveness is a choice. We choose whether we forgive or whether we become bitter and angry. And our example is Jesus. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. What did Jesus do as he was being killed on the cross? The Roman centurions had just nailed his wrists and his feet to the cross. And they were then throwing dice to decide who was going to get his clothes, casting lots. And there he is, dying, knowing he has been killed, murdered by these men. And he says, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Here's a question. Did Jesus actually forgive them or not? Well, the answer is, of course he did. But you know someone has forgiven through their actions. You know someone has forgiven by how they then respond. And if I was Jesus, which I'm really not, but if I was, and I wanted to stay mad or bear a grudge, the group who would be at the top of that grudge list would be Roman centurions. I mean, they're the ones who just nailed him to the cross. So, you know, if you wanted to hold a grudge. I mean, there were others who were involved, but Roman centurions would be top of the list. And yet, who was it that Jesus, by his Spirit, first sent Peter to take this message of hope, of new identity, and of relationship with God to? Well, if you don't know, it happened in Acts 10, and it's a Roman centurion called Cornelius. Jesus forgave. He forgave Roman centurions. He welcomed Roman centurions into his kingdom. And because of that Roman centurion, we're sitting here today. Because the message of hope to the Gentile, to the non-Jewish people, came through that Roman centurion. Does he really forgive us? Did Jesus hold a grudge? No. Did he really forgive? Yes. Does he really forgive us? Yes. Are we to forgive as he forgave us? Yes. Jesus never said forgiveness would be easy. It's a process, and I don't want to simplify it. Sometimes we need to start by knowing, believing, and acting as if we've been forgiven. Sometimes we need to forgive ourselves, to really believe God has forgiven us, and then to forgive ourselves. And Stuart, who's a student who's with us at the moment, speaking at the 9:15 and this morning, speaking on this passage, gave a beautiful illustration, which I've stolen. He said, forgiveness is like peeling away the layers of an onion. It's full of layers. You peel the layers away, and every layer has the capacity to bring tears. You know, it's a thing of peeling layers away. Forgiveness is a choice. Our actions reflect the choices we make. How we behave demonstrates whether we feel we've been forgiven and whether we're living out forgiveness in our world. I saw the power of forgiveness to bring healing demonstrated time and again over my sabbatical, particularly in my trip to Lebanon. And please do pray for Lebanon at the moment. I had a message from Saeed, who's the pastor of the church that we partner in Lebanon this morning. They are really, really concerned. You might have picked up on the news. Their prime minister has resigned. It is such an insecure country that him stepping down could lead to all sorts of factions and potentially civil war again. So please pray for Lebanon that that does not happen. But when I went to Lebanon, I met people who had discovered in the most terrible circumstances and situations the power of forgiveness. That they were not going to be bound by anger and bitterness, but they were going to clothe themselves with compassion, kindness, gentleness, and through their love, they were going to forgive. See, this is our secret weapon, forgiveness. As we put on love and forgive, we change the world. We can change society. This was, illustrated to me. When I was out in Lebanon, I went to a conference called Leading in Disorienting Times. And it was at the Arab Baptist Theological Seminary, Arab Baptist Bible College. And it gathered speakers from Egypt, from the Middle East, from various places where they experienced major persecution. And these speakers were sharing about persecution and their response to persecution. And there was a speaker called John from Turkmenistan. I don't think that was his real name, but that's what they told us he was called. Called John. And John, when he was 17, he was into alcohol. He was into drugs in Turkmenistan, his village in Turkmenistan, this area. He lived in Turkmenistan. And he's now probably in his 40s, I suppose, but he was at that stage when he was 17, that was when the Soviet Union sort of started coming to pieces and Turkmenistan started to get its independence. And he was Christian number 7 in the country of Turkmenistan. He was the 7th person to become a Christian in Turkmenistan. And he knows that because the first person to become a Christian was someone from his village who went to Moscow. And in Moscow, a missionary shared faith with him. He became a Christian. He went back to his village and started sharing people, telling people about the love of Jesus and transformation that Jesus could make in their lives. And John became Christian number 7. And this completely transformed John. He was telling everyone about Jesus and about the difference Jesus could make to them and the difference he had discovered. But the KGB, who was still active in Turkmenistan, did not like this. So they took John in, and he was in prison for 2 weeks. And he said this as he was speaking at this conference: they used all the methods of Stalin on me. Strong officers beat me every night. Masks were put over my head to suffocate me. Needles were put in my body. 5 times I was placed in the electric chair. Why? Because I spoke about Jesus. I spoke about what I knew that Jesus is, the way, the truth, and the life, and that's what I preached. I was hit in the face. And then he told this story, and I remember it so clearly. He said, I had a foot placed on my head, and my head ground into the ground, and my mouth ground into the ground. And the KGB officer said to me, this mouth should never speak about Jesus. I told the KGB officer, you cannot close my mouth or take away what is here. As long as I can speak, you will still hear from me because it's not my mind, it's my heart. extraordinary courage. And he then went on and said, and he was wrong because I speak on TV every day. He's now a sort of, he has a TV ministry in Turkey that goes back into Turkmenistan. When he got out of prison, he was given asylum, and he was given asylum in Norway. So he gave this story, and we're like thinking, oh, really? I live in Whitney. Occasionally people might laugh at me, you know. This is different to my experience of being a Christian. But the forgiveness bit, the bit that almost was even more remarkable, was that when he was growing up, he had a best friend. And they'd grown up together, and they'd wanted to join the KGB together. And John hadn't, but his best friend had. And during the beatings, during this 2 weeks of imprisonment, his best friend was there as one of the KGB officers doing this to him. 10 years later, that best friend rang him. He'd been kicked out of the KGB. He was divorced 3 times, and he wanted to know what the difference was that John had. What would you do? How would you respond? Forgiveness affects our behavior. John invited him to come and live with him. So for 3 weeks, he lived with him and his wife and his family. He helped him get a flat and to be reconciled with his wife. He demonstrated the love of God to him. John said this, God shows us the way, and we show the way to the world. God shows us the way, and we show the way to the world. That's forgiveness in action. One speaker who was speaking straight after, who was from the West, said, I struggle forgiving someone who makes a bad comment about me on Facebook, let alone someone who's tortured me for 2 weeks. Do we forgive as Jesus forgave us? It's a choice. Forgiveness is a choice. And when we choose to forgive, we decide that the actions of people, institution, or organizations that have hurt us in the past will not dictate how we live in the future. We will live out our identity as children of Christ in the freedom it brings. Forgiveness gives us back some of that control that has been taken from us because of the circumstances of the pain, the hurt. We choose how to respond. We choose how to respond to the people involved. One final story. Joe said about the GLS in Chicago. We had the privilege, Sue and I had the privilege of attending it live. One of the speakers was called Immaculée Ilibagaza. She was amazing. She is worth the ticket price. We get this amazing 65% discount on ticket prices. If you can come just to hear her. She's a survivor of the 1994 Rwanda genocide that took the lives of nearly 1 million Tutsis, including her entire family except one brother. She survived because her father, who was a pastor, told her as the violence was breaking out to go next door to the Hutu house, where it was a Hutu pastor lived next door to them. They were Tutsis. It was the Hutus who were doing the killing. It was a Hutu pastor who lived next door. So he sent her. Apparently her father, the last thing he said before he died, he was preaching the love of Jesus before he was hacked down by the mob. But she was sent next door, and this Hutu pastor took her in, and he took her into the bathroom. He took her through the house, through to a bathroom. It was 3 foot by 4 foot. And I was trying to work out how big this was, but it's a tiny bit of this stage, 3 foot by 4 foot. And she went in, she thought, I can't stay here. The next day, the pastor brought 7 more women into that bathroom. So there were 8 of them in that bathroom. The youngest was 7 years old. There were 8 of them in that bathroom for 3 months while the killings were going on around them, 91 days. Despite unimaginable suffering, you know, at one stage she heard one of the soldiers outside, and she recognized his voice, and she knew that he'd been at primary school with her. And he was saying to the pastor, I have killed 399 cockroaches, which is what he called the Tutsis. Immaculée would make 400. And we are looking for her. She heard this in the bathroom. Another time, 300 men turned up and searched this house. They searched in suitcases, but they didn't find the bathroom. They didn't go into the bathroom. God protected her. And despite unimaginable suffering, she committed herself to a life of peace, hope, and forgiveness. And she works for the United Nations. She's the best-selling author of Left to Tell, Discovering God Amidst the Rwandan Holocaust. She started reading the Bible while she was a Christian, but while she was in the bathroom, praying the Lord's Prayer. But she would skip the part that said, "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us." She couldn't say it. She felt she was lying to God. How could she possibly forgive her enemies? Then someone said, "I hope you know our Lord's Prayer is not man-made. Jesus gave us those words. If I were you, I wouldn't edit his prayer." Immaculée realized that if Jesus knew how to forgive, then in her situation, she needed his help to forgive. She asked God to help her, and she learned the beauty of letting go of her bitterness and anger. She was reminded of Jesus saying, "Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do." She realized that the people who killed her family knew not what they did, and her withholding forgiveness would not change anything. She began to see her enemies as children of God. She prayed for them and felt so much peace. She said, "I used to think that forgiveness was that you forgive someone who said something bad about you, not someone that was trying to kill you." And then she says this line, I think there's a quote there. "If I can forgive, anyone can forgive. There is so much freedom in letting go. If I can forgive, anyone can forgive. There is so much freedom in letting go." God helps us to forgive, but we have to make the initial choice. We have to be willing to forgive. We have to choose to forgive. And it might be that we have to ask God to help us to choose to forgive and to give us the strength to forgive. She asked God. She learned the beauty of letting go of her bitterness and anger. You see, you and I have got a choice with regard to healing past hurts. We can choose whether we forgive or not. But there are two dangers if we choose not. The first is we become angry and bitter. The second is we're going against God's direction, and that's not good. Forgiveness is a choice, but honestly, if you're a Christian following Jesus, I don't believe you have a choice. If we want to live as faithful Christians, we choose to forgive. But then, look what happens when we do. The final few verses of this passage. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body you are called to peace and be thankful. Let the message of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom through psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. And whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. Taking this step of forgiveness is a step towards peace. It's a step towards peace. When we forgive as God has forgiven us, we discover more of the peace of Christ ruling in our hearts. You know, today, for some of us, it may just be the start of a process. It may just be the prayer, "God, help me to forgive. Help me to forgive." For others, we may be on that process, and we may know who we need to forgive, and we may need to take that decision that we are going to forgive them with God's help. Some of us may need to pray with someone about forgiveness and about help and letting go of some of this anger and bitterness that we feel and receiving forgiveness ourselves so that we can forgive others. For others, we may need to know that we've been forgiven. It may need that we may need to speak with our connect groups Ask them to help us to pray for God's strength to forgive, to even start the process. But wherever we are tonight, my hope for us all is that the peace of Christ would rule in our hearts. That together with that peace ruling our hearts, we would bear with each other, forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Choose to forgive. Choose to forgive.